Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Monday, October 16th. So glad you're with us today. And welcome to our listeners in Bismarck at 89.1 and 94.1 in Hartford and 93.1 in Waterloo, and to our friends in Madison at 104.7. I also want to say to any listener in Madison who wants to call, I want to hear from you. I want to hear about the mourning that's going on in Wisconsin over the loss of Aaron Rodgers. Temporarily, he might be out for the season, but he might be back. But I was very sad about that hit yesterday, and I think it was a legit hit, but he still went down. It looks like he broke his collarbone, and what a loss to the NFL. And being enough of a football fan, I don't like Aaron Rodgers not being on the field. And I know you don't either if you live in Wisconsin or are a Packers fan. So maybe you're a Packers fan living in Minneapolis and because you're a transplant here. Give us a call. We'd love to hear what you're thinking about that. 1-877-933-2484 is our number. And here's something I had on my desktop of my computer for a while, and honestly, I've been trying to find out who said it, but it's just so wonderful. It goes like this. If you really want God to bless you, understand that his blessing may be in things we lose. When we seek for more from God, he may strip us of things we no longer need. God cannot fill us up if we are full of ourselves. Neither can we comprehend his good gifts if we are blinded by distraction. Praying for blessing means being willing to deny yourself and your will and instead surrender fully to the will of God. That's a good words for this morning. All right, we're going to take a little break. And my good friend and colleague, Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines, is already on Skype. We'll be speaking with him in just a minute. Be back in 1 minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
Well, we've had some budget cuts around here, and we can't pay the royalties any longer on the song, Patrick.
Is that what it is? You just couldn't find the clip.
No, we had the clip. We just can't pay the royalties anymore. So.
Oh, for crying. Well, I appreciate the effort.
So how are you this morning?
You know me, living the life other people merely dream of.
Yeah, exactly. So
getting up at 30, hitting the gym, going to the grocery store, making sandwiches, and then I'm sitting down for the radio. Oh, awesome. I've done all that.
Awesome. Well, boy, I had a busy weekend. Boy, what'd you do, Bill?
What did you do? I know what you did, but I have to ask how it
went. Why didn't you ask then? I don't have to ask myself.
Okay, and should I let people know that I know what you did?
No, act stupid.
Hey, Bill, did you do anything this weekend perhaps for the first time that maybe made you a tad bit nervous?
Yes, I did.
What could it be?
I actually officiated my very first wedding on Saturday. I was the officiant, yes.
I was
a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how's the couple still married? I'm thinking.
I'm not sure it's legit. The grandmother came up to me and said, "So did you have to go to school for 4 years for this?" I said, "No, I just had to go to the internet for 4 minutes."
Yeah, well, there was a 2-week follow-up quiz. I recall it was kind of like check this box. Have you performed any weddings?
So now I'm legal to marry and bury. So. If you're interested in me doing your wedding, I need 10% down as a deposit. And if you want me to do the funeral, it's 100% up front.
Yeah, but you will take a post-dated check. By the way, I'm just going to say that's not an ideal business model. Very hard to collect. Should the check bounce? And I'm not saying that people would ever do that to you. But, you know, at that point, you're saying, what the heck? I'm not paying Visa either.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Congratulations on that.
It was a lot of fun, and it was an honor to do it, and I would do it again, to be honest. It was fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe we can find another willing couple, or unwilling, if need be. So, I mean, that's a big weekend. And
it was.
You did your – how's your viral video going? You did that.
I did. I made a viral video, but it's had very few views.
And what's it up to?
I think 57.
Now, are you aware that 36 of those are mine, by the way? Now, and here's the thing. I had to use 36 different computers because it tracks your ISP address and it doesn't count multiple views from the same guy. So, you know, I've been at the office store buying computers left and right. You owe me a few bucks.
That is so nice of you. So,
well,
a British man, Patrick, I found this interesting. A British man left home without telling a soul a decade ago after his wife started showing a controlling behavior. He lived in the woods a decade to avoid his wife.
What made him come back home? I forgot something?
Malcolm Applegate slept in the woods next to a community center for the elderly. He eventually moved into a homeless shelter on the south side of London. Applegate has since made contact with his sister for the first time in 10 years. She thought he was dead. Applegate said he spends his time doing odd jobs and raising money for charity. No word on Applegate's wife.
Honey, I'm just going to step out for a minute. I'll be this shouldn't take long. Maybe a decade.
Right, right.
Wow.
And in 18,
his wife was exhibiting controlling behavior, was she?
I guess so. And in 1829, the first modern hotel opens in Boston. I think its original purpose was to prop up the new emerging minibar industry.
Oh, I remember that. And then the Maxi Bar Union, they were all against it, of course, because they were saying you're trying to take your jobs away from actual working people. I believe the Maxi Bar Union people had to join the Buggy Whip people. They formed a small protest.
So I'm disturbed that Aaron Rodgers is out for the season. It looks that way anyway, and it happened on Minnesota turf. Makes me sad. I don't like to see that.
Yeah, are you allowed to let people know where your allegiance lies, football team wise?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I love watching Packers games. I mean, I'm a Vikings fan, but I love watching the Packers, and I love Aaron Rodgers. And it's just sad to think that he's going to be out the rest of the season.
Well, and you know, I'm a Bears fan. I grew up in the Chicago area. And, of course, I'm used to watching the Packers beat the Bears pretty handily. So one of the reasons you become a Packers fan is you want to see them beat a whole bunch of other teams because in a way that makes you think that your team isn't that bad. You go, you know what? They beat everybody. They beat everybody like that. So it is he is so exciting to watch. I mean, especially coming on the heels of Brett Favre, you say, well, the Packers will never replace anybody of that caliber. And then Aaron Rodgers comes along and you're saying, Brett, who? Look at this guy.
I know. Isn't that true?
I don't want to see anybody go down to an injury. I you think, wow, you worked your whole life for this, and there's even that small party that says, I do want to see you out of the game when you're playing against my team. I don't want you to get hurt. If you could just say, gee, my kid's got a birthday party that day and we got to go to Chuck E. Cheese's. I can't make the game. I'd be good with that.
Yeah. And your Cubbies lost last night.
So you had to bring that up.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. But they're down 2-0, aren't they?
They are down 2-0. Of course, you know, Cub fans, we lasted 100-some-odd years till we got a World Series. So that should cover us until the next century anyway.
Right. Let's not be greedy. You guys shouldn't get greedy.
Yeah. You know what was so funny? I in a way, I was kind of pulling for the Cleveland Indians this year because I thought, well, you know what? It was really heartbreaking for them to lose. Go Cubs! Last year because they also had quite the drought. But it looks like that's not going to happen. So yeah, now I'm, of course, you know, a little bit distraught that the Cubs are down 2-0, but they did that a couple of times last year. They'd get behind and then they'd come back. I mean, they were down 3-1 in the World Series and you go, what's over?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. So, you know, when for some reason, if you're from the Midwest and you are a sports fan of any kind, your team has a special way of manipulating your emotions. And I'm kind of getting tired of it.
Because it's working on you, isn't it?
It's working on me. It's like, oh, gosh. But on a positive note, during the Cub game last night, at least here in the Des Moines area, I had two television commercials running almost back to back. And you had no idea either one was me.
Yeah, featuring you. Is that right?
Featuring me. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
So yeah. I want to put your commercials up on the Early Morning Late Show webpage on Facebook because I think our listeners would like to get a look at you in these commercials. They're excellent commercials, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this new Santa Claus one I really like. Yes, me Santa, and I'm somewhat trim.
The trim Santa. Yeah, the trim
it's
Santa
the new
version.
Santa.
All right,
yeah.
Patrick, I'm going to take a break. It's 15 after. When I come back, the president of France is taking away Harvey Weinstein's Medal of Honor, and I'll tell you why when we return. Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I hope you had a nice weekend. It is Monday morning, and here we are speaking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. And Patrick, the president of France is taking away Harvey Weinstein's Medal of Honor from the country.
Now, is it true? Yeah, is he going to give it to Roman Polanski? That's what I heard.
No, they're
going to give it to someone who deserves it, darn it.
Yeah, they're taking it away because they said the film... producer's actions lack honor.
Well, I would agree they lack honor. Now, how do you go back? How do you go and get the? I mean, do you send over
the cable guy?
SWAT team?
No, you send in the cable guy.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, and he gets it.
You know, it's funny. You never turned on the cable guy because you always go, well, you know, you're here now. if I don't let you in now, it could be months before you come back. So just check to see if I need anything. Wow. Taking away the Academy of Motion Picture, they kicked him out.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So I guess that fixes everything, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know if there's if you have a strong track record of recovering from these clinics that these guys go to. It's because they say he doesn't really have a sex addiction as much as he's got something worse. He's
a
predator.
He certainly seems like it's a power addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he just liked to push people around. And having lived out there, I had seen people with that kind of attitude. They do the things they do because they can. And unfortunately, it sort of perpetuates itself because after you've been that guy on the lower rung of the ladder that's had people step on you, you know, you get to a position of prominence and, you know, I don't want to say the die is cast, but sometimes there's just a little bit of, you know, this is how it works and I'm getting people back. You know, as they say, in show business, you know, be careful, you know, on your way up the ladder of success, you know, the people you step on, because you may want to step on them again on the way down. You know, so I think that's, they just sort of step all over each other, and I think there are a lot more Harvey Weinsteins, I guess, is what I'm saying.
What do you think about what the late night comedians have been doing in terms of sort of saying fewer jokes and more political agenda?
Well, it seems like they're turning the phrase late night comedian into an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
It's where's the comedy? And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel has gone kind of goofy with, you know, his recent rants on gun control and, you know, Obamacare. He gives this, you know, 7-minute impassioned plea bashing people that would like to see Obamacare dismantled. And, you know, he's got a son that has a heart defect. And so, you know, you feel for him, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the guy to decide things because he has a personal story. And of course, we all know that he's not using Obamacare. He's, you know, he's going to Cedars-Sinai and using the most expensive doctors in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does a gun control rant, and they start to label him the moral conscience of America. He avoids the Harvey Weinstein saga, and he gets interviewed. He says, well, I'm not the moral conscience of America. I never called myself that. It's like, well, other people did, mm-hmm. and you never stepped in and said, no, 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 don't do that. But now you're doing it. And then he goes and says, look, I don't even care if I alienate half of my potential viewers. In fact, I don't even want to talk to any Republicans. So that'll convince people.
Yeah. If you can't get their attention and hold it, how can you be influencing them in any way?
Well, of course, you always say to me, and I have no idea where you stole this from. You must have
Carson.
Carson.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the velvet pillow analogy. But I mean, you said in order to be a person of influence, you have to be willing to be influenced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into these situations and say, you know, it's possible somebody could say something that could change my mind. And I think that what Jimmy Kimmel is saying is I don't even want to open up the possibility that somebody could come up with an argument or a point that could change my mind. And the only way to do that is by just not talking to them.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on with these people.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Obamacare and the decision that Trump made. I mean, everyone kind of knew from the beginning, and lawmakers didn't seem to mind with the generous tax credits that were going for low-income Americans, but they really didn't want to be seen as the money funneled to corporate insurance companies, because I think that's why the Obama administration made these requests and implemented this in the beginning, because they kept those insurance companies propped up, which allowed Obamacare to continue.
Yeah. But the courts ruled that those payments were illegal because Obama did not have the authority to open up the Treasury and write out checks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are saying right now, they go, oh, they're, you know, that Trump is killing the subsidies. No, the subsidies actually still exist. What he said is that no longer are we going to reimburse insurance companies for these losses that they're incurring, which was kind of Obama's sneaky way of getting insurance companies to go ahead and, you know, put together some low-cost plans, because he said, look, if you lose money, we got you covered. But it wasn't written into the original bill. And so Obama's moves were unconstitutional. And Trump basically just went right back to the Constitution, the law as written, and said, you cannot reimburse these companies. That Congress actually has to vote the money, has to appropriate the money. The president cannot do that. And, well, of course, the sky is falling. But, you know, first off, the fact that he's going after Obamacare after, between a year and a half of campaigning and nearly a year of being president, and all he talks about is wanting to get rid of the program. Why is anybody surprised? Trump kind of has a tendency to do that. This is, I'm going after this. And then he did. So I think his timing might have even been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because insurance companies, I think, had to declare by middle of summer, end of summer, you know, whether they were going to stay in these exchanges. And then they had to actually put their rates forth, you know, I think by no later than October. So by saying, by the way, if you are running a poor business model and you're losing money, you're going to have to talk to Congress. Mm-hmm. You have to see if you get them to pass an appropriations bill to pay you guys. I'm not going to do it. You know, had he done that maybe right off the bat when he got into office, there might have been some insurance companies that pulled out and said, you know, we're abandoning everything. And that would have been pretty messy. Now, it just kicks the can down the road for a year. But he has put the pressure on Congress, says, you guys have got about less than a year to get a plan in place, because if the insurance companies do not get these reimbursements, they're probably going to abandon these exchanges left and right. And we're going to need something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's putting the pressure on them.
Patrick, what do you think the people of West Des Moines feel about ISIS? And, you know, I'm reading reports now that once promised paradise, ISIS fighters end up in mass graves. And over the last week, 1,000 or 100 ISIS fighters have surrendered. Do we perceive them to be really powerful? And maybe in reality, they're not as powerful as we think?
I think so. I think that they certainly felt momentum. You know, they're kind of a propaganda firm anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe they were able to get recruits, especially over the Obama years, because they were able to convince people that they were winning. The fact that the majority of ISIS news has vanished from the paper
mm-hmm.
tells you things must be going well. I remember that with the Iraq war. When things were going pretty poorly, it was, you know, front page to back page coverage. And then we had the infamous surge, and they turned things around. And suddenly it's like, where's the Iraq news? It's like, right here next to the mattress sale ad. It's like, where'd it go? It's on page A42.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was good news, they couldn't report it. And I'm beginning to think, you know, maybe we're turning some things around. Maybe. I'd like to be optimistic, because we don't want to live in terror. We don't want to think that, you could go to my wife works at a performing arts center, and they do bag searches there. And it's just, you go out for an evening of theater, and you say, well, they search bags because that's the new normal. And I'd like to go back to the old normal, where we didn't take our shoes off at the airport and we didn't get bags searched at a theater.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. Always always a pleasure. I look forward to Monday mornings.
Oh, always a pleasure, except that one time. That one.
I remember that time in particular.
Yes. All right. See you next week.
Yep. Bye-bye. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. Good morning. It's half past the hour. In Psalm 19, it says, "May these words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer." We'll take a short break for news and then come back with more of the show in just a minute. Good morning. It's 25 minutes till the top of the hour. Living simply starts with practicing spiritual disciplines. Dr. Philip Nation says, it all begins with looking at what you love most.
Where is my heart's affection? Where is my mind's attention? Where do I place my affection and my attention? And those are the things I'm going to discipline myself to follow after and chase after. And everything else becomes just this really sad case of idolatry where we're just trying to domesticate deity and just get him conformed to who we are. And that's the problem with legalism. In the end, it's not trying to convince God that we're good enough for him. It really is diminishing God so that he will just bow to our whims and our will. And so we need to first ask the question, where is all of my love placed? What is it that I esteem and I hold in the highest value? And then you let the disciplines chase after.
That was Dr. Philip Nation. And if that was my name, I would start my career as a white rapper. What a great name, Dr. Philip Nation. Anyway, if you want to hear that entire interview, head over to myfaithradio.com and then type in the search engine, Dr. Philip Nation, and you'll get right to that interview. We'll take a short break, and then when we return, Ruth Kramer is with us from Mission Network News. Be back in a minute.
I challenge anyone who'd say today that the local church is no longer relevant. And so can you. This is Jim Garlow. What would this community, what would your community be like if every true Bible-teaching church suddenly disappeared? It'd be a disaster. As bad as things are right now, it would be a whole lot worse without the teaching of God's Word. Where would you be as a family? What would it be like to be a parent, a grandparent, without the support of a church system? We need the church. I need the church. I need the rich fellowship, the prayers, and the support in tough times. I need the way the local church body influences and impacts my life. A church that is truly biblical is a moral compass in your community. Imagine having that moral compass disappear. Imagine what that would be like. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Boldly go where no one has gone before.
Good morning. It's 23 minutes until the top of the hour, and that music makes my next guest very happy. Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How was your weekend?
It went by very quickly.
Yeah.
Got a kid home for fall break, so, you know, we're short on sleep, but high on laughter.
Oh, good. Good. A lot of laughter around your house is always good. All right, let's get into some of the mission news that's out there. This Andrew Brunson case just got real sad once again, didn't it?
It's a combination of things. The Andrew Brunson case involves an American pastor who was serving a church in Turkey for 20 years. And shortly after the coup, the unsuccessful coup, when the administration started cracking down on anything and anyone that they connected to opposition to the government's ideology. The Christians, a lot of Christian missionaries, a lot of teachers, a lot of pastors were swept up in that coup, were arrested. Some of them were deported. Some of them were put into prison. Andrew Brunson is one of the guys that got put into prison. The charges he's facing are incredibly high state crime charges. He's been charged with espionage, among other things, treason, terrorism, and that kind of thing. And right now, it looks like the prosecutors have kind of re-upped the game. October 7th is the one-year anniversary of Brunson's arrest, and the government has to come up with another set of charges if a trial hasn't actually moved forward. So they've got a one-year clock on that, and if nothing is ready to move forward, then they do something else like re-up the charges or add something to it so that they can start the clock over again. In this situation, it looks like the prosecutors are aiming at a 4 consecutive life term prison sentence should Andrew Brunson be convicted on the charges. What we should note here is that a lot of the groups that are trying to advocate on his behalf are saying there is no evidence at all to back up the charges. So the government really doesn't have a case that will stand up. And what it's really beginning to look like is that Brunson is kind of a political pawn in a game between Turkey and the U.S. that has gotten very, very difficult. As you know, the tensions between the two countries have gotten much colder and I would say more hostile. There's a lot of different things that are going on, and Turkey is using Andrew Brunson as a pawn to try to get someone back that it's kind of like a prisoner swap, except that the guy that they're after in from the U.S. isn't actually a prisoner. He's in exile and he has come to the States, but Turkey believes that he is behind the coup. They believe he's a mastermind. So they're trying to get him back. His name is Gulen, and he's an Islamic cleric. So it's been very difficult, you know, and of course Turkey is asking for something that the U.S. really isn't going to grant for a number of reasons. Number one being he's not a prisoner. You know, that's kind of an impossible swap to make. You've got a lot of other issues that are coming up between the Turkish and the U.S. government relations. So the Brunson case is kind of sandwiched in the middle. It's a pivotal hinge point at this juncture of the situation. And so the organizations that are speaking out on his behalf are just really saying we need to be praying about a lot of things. We need to be praying that there will be some justice in this situation, that truth will come out, that the right people will be put into the right place to get things to move along, that God will move in this situation mightily. And while all this stuff is going on, this is not really new news. What we did get was kind of an interesting story from our partner, Middle East Concern, that have been in touch with the family. His wife has been deported from Turkey, so she's back in the States. And she's been in contact with Middle East Concern on a regular basis with communication and things like that are going on with her husband. While he's been in behind bars in a very difficult situation, he's written basically what amounts to a psalm. You know, when you look at the psalms, it reveals the mindset of the writer to his relationship with God. He's calling out, he's lamenting, he's praising. Sometimes you get both. Sometimes you get more than two things in there. You get layers of different things that just kind of sweep you along with where that person is. And Andrew Brunson has written a song like that.
Mm-hmm.
We've shared that on our website, and I would really encourage people to read it, because while this sounds like a really difficult story and it's depressing and all of that kind of thing, because it's hard and there's not a lot that we can do from where we sit on the ground other than to advocate and keep praying and believe that God's going to do something. The words that Andrew shares from his heart are incredibly encouraging in the situation. So I would really encourage you guys to take a look at the song that he wrote. You'll find it on either Middle East Concern's website, Middle East MECconcern.org, or you'll find it on Mission Network News' website, because we've also put it there just to kind of edify people who are going to be coming alongside to pray with him.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I will share a couple of quick verses. You are worthy, worthy of my all, but my heart faints, drowned in sorrow, overwhelmed. Make me like you, cross-bearer, persevering, faithful to the end, to stand the trial and receive the crown of life. And I love this verse 2, Ruth. I want to be found worthy to stand before you on that day with no regrets from cowardice, things left undone, to hear you say, well done, my faithful friend. Now enter your reward. Jesus, my joy, you are the prize I'm running for. It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. This is one of those things that your heart sings with him, as much as it is, you pray while you're reading through his words, mm-hmm. because this is prayer.
Yeah. We're going to take a break in about a minute, Ruth. And sometimes I get confused as to where the gospel is, really alive and where it's being kicked out. So I thought India was really on fire for the gospel, but it looks like, according to this report, there's a lot of Christian ministries getting kicked out of India right now.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that the gospel isn't on fire there.
Okay.
It's because it's on fire that you have these issues.
Okay.
What I would say is the ministries that are coming alongside the bodies and instructing them and helping them as supporting them really are going to have to be the ones that back off. And now it's going to be the national church that mm-hmm. stands on. They're being raised up to answer the needs of their own country, and they can do it better than anybody else. So it's both a prayer need to allow some of these ministries to stay there and come alongside and support the churches that still need a little bit of help. But it's also a praise, because the churches are going to be ready to stand no matter what. They're going to have to stand, and they're willing to do that. So the body of Christ in India is coming to a place where they're going to stand on their own, and they're maturing to that point.
Awesome.
So it's a great story, even though there are some things that we need to be concerned about and watching.
Yeah. Well, let me correct myself. Gospel is always on fire.
Oh, yeah, it is. Because it changes. It changes people. It changes mm-hmm. communities. It changes hearts, and you can't go back after that.
Yeah. Ruth, let me take a break. When we come back, more with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in a minute. We are back. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. And Ruth, as we're talking about India and how the gospel is facing a lot of opposition there, they also have gone through some terrible problems just with natural disasters, earthquakes and everything else, all the issues that are going on over in India. What can we do in terms of disaster relief in India?
Well, there are a number of ministries, as I said, partnering with churches, helping to raise them up. One of our partners is India Partners, and they have a network in place, so they can respond to things like the big earthquakes. We'll use an example of one of the major earthquakes in 2004. A 9.1 magnitude quake hit. It killed 230,000 people. That was the tsunami one.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a network of people in place to be able to quickly distribute the relief aid that was being sent in to help with the immediate needs and the survival needs. That the reason that is so successful is because you have less administration, you have less confusion with people that are coming in and trying to set up a base to distribute things from. And usually what it means is when they plan ahead and they have relief on the ground and ready to go, then there's an immediate response. So you're not having this thing with 2 weeks before somebody can get something over there. They're immediately responding. And because of that, people turn to the church, because the church is usually among the first organizations that are ready to do something. It speaks well of the body of Christ. It speaks well of the faith that these people follow, about why they're doing what they're doing. It opens a lot of opportunities to discuss things. At the same time, when we're looking at these kinds of things, and we say, it's a pray, give, go kind of a liturgy. We can pray, and we have to believe that God's going to do something amazing in these kinds of situations. We can give, and that becomes an issue for some of these ministries, and we can go. With India, a lot of ministries are having to come up with very creative ways on how to get funding in the country, because the laws now are changing, where it's making it very difficult to have outside funding coming in, because it's becoming a national identity thing. And with the president and the prime minister being part of the BJP, the Hindu Nationalist Party, there's going to be more difficulties and more laws that are going to come down that are going to make things very creatively challenging for ministries. Security problems are also part of that. So be praying for those who are representing the name of Christ in countries like India, because mm-hmm. a lot of them are facing security problems to the point now where they can't really tell their stories anymore and connect them to what their worldview is, because they're getting threats as a result of that. So India Partners is one of our groups that is kind of dealing with this issue, with the security issues. It's not going to change what they do on the ground in terms of being the hands and feet of Christ, but they have to be much, much more careful about how they do, what they do, and what they say about it. Be in prayer for ministries like this, because we've seen what happens already with Compassion International that had to leave.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, let's talk about election corruption. Is that the classic oxymoron?
You're talking Kenya.
And yeah, corruption in Kenya.
Wow, Kenya is
really... And I get to say Raila Odinga this morning, which makes me happy.
Well, it's a pretty tense place right now. Mm-hmm. Raila Odinga was the opposition leader, and he ran against the incumbent, Uhuru Kenyatta, and that was back in August 8. And Kenyatta actually won the election, and it seemed like things were going to go forward at that point. But Odinga lodged a protest with the Supreme Court and said that the elections were corrupted, that there was a lot of cheating and things like that. And the Supreme Court actually agreed with him. So they nullified the election results and reset a new election date for October 26. Last week, Odinga withdrew from the election, and he said nothing has changed in the way things are happening, so the results will be corrupted again because there is no significant change in how things are done, which is what led up to the original problem to begin with. And then on Sunday, people were hoping that this is going to just kind of go another round of let's go with another legal thing, let's do what we can to fix this so we don't have massive eruptions of violence like we did in 2007. But on Sunday, Odinga finally told his supporters to protest. And authorities in central Nairobi and other hotspot cities have basically banned protests to try to, you know, eliminate the difficulties of potential riots. That's kind of being ignored in a lot of places. There's a lot of confusion about what's happening there. The election board has said the vote will go ahead, even though Odinga has pulled out of the election. And he's saying there's no point in having an election because the two top candidates aren't going to be on the ballot, so it'll be imbalanced anyway. The election board said, well, it's going to go ahead. We'll put the six other candidates on the ballot, and that's how the vote's going to go. Unfortunately, the other six candidates they're putting on the ballot didn't make much of a blip on the radar screen. Mm-hmm. So none of them pulled more than 1%. And when you looked at Kenyatta's vote result, it was a little under, I should say a little over half. Mm-hmm. And Odinga had a little bit under half. So, you know, who he's facing is the powerhouse giants to the no names. And it is likely that there's going to be some concern about some violence. One of our partners there is Door International. It's a deaf Bible translation ministry, and they have teams on the ground that are working on Bible translation right now for the New Testament. And they were planning on staying there through November to finish some of their work, but things are getting so tense that they're considering maybe adjusting some of that plan, pulling out early so that they're out of the area before it starts getting really hard. There's a lot of concern about what the disruption might mean for the rest of the country and how long it takes to settle down from that. So there's a lot of prayer needs there. Mm-hmm. The ministry that we're working with, the Door International, is just saying that they are praying for wisdom for the leadership in Kenya. They're asking that other people who are joining them in prayer pray that leadership makes wise decisions. It's a very complex thing. You add a whole layer of tribal tension on top of it. And what the next thing is kind of an unknown. The Constitution says that the vote must take place by November 1st. So if that moves forward the way it is with no changes, we could see some very difficult situations that complicate things for translation and church planning.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, we just have a couple minutes left, and I want you to talk a little bit about the Jesus film, because I know people in mission work abroad use this regularly. It's a great tool, not so much here in the U.S., but overseas. And there's a way we can support helping more missionaries use this Jesus film project.
Well, let me tell you, this story is kind of an interesting story. I had a chance to talk to a representative. His name is Ray Rowland, and he was sharing the Jesus film gift card, which looks like a gift card, but it's basically a business card that has the web links to the Jesus film. And it's just something you can hand out. It's a little bit like a tract. It doesn't tell you much about the Jesus film. I mean, that should be fairly evident. But it's something you just hand out and give someone to give them the website address so they can find the language that they need to find. This guy that we spoke to, his name is Ray, and he was telling us about a story of a woman he ran into in the States. And he noticed that she was dressed a little bit differently. He noticed that she was speaking a different language. And he was kind of trying to figure out what language it was, and he couldn't identify it. So he talked to her. He introduced himself, and she was in a full burqa.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked her, you know, what language do you speak? And she said it was Dari. And he said, that's a beautiful language. I'd like to give you a gift. May I give you a gift? And so she said, okay. And he gave her a Jesus Film gift card. And he goes, this card will introduce you to a movie in your language. And she says, nobody has a movie in my language. And she says, I've been here for 10 years, and you are the first American to approach me and speak to me and to give me a gift in my language.
Wow. That's powerful, Ruth. I love that story. So thank you for coming on the show. Always you give us a much more global understanding of what's going on in missions around the world. Thank you so much.
And
have a great day. That's Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. We'll take a short break and be back with hour two of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. That wraps up hour one. We've got a great second hour coming up. We're going to start with Dr. Linda Mintel, always awesome. And then we're going to speak to Dr. Michael Brown. So it's going to be a great hour. We'll see you in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.